Welcome to the 10K Collective, my friends. Now, look, if you're listening for hacks and short-term tactics, I'm afraid you are in the wrong place. Let me tell you about the 10K Collective Mastermind. First of all, its members meet in person. They know each other well. They all make over $500,000 a year. Several make several million a year. Many have doubled their revenue over the last 18 months. If you're that kind of person, then this podcast is made for you. Today's episode is sponsored by the new e-commerce podcast, The E-Commerce Leader. The podcast is hosted by yours truly and Jason Miles, multi-million dollar Shopify owner and Udemy's highest rated e-commerce instructor. If you're the owner of a thriving online business and you want to become the best e-commerce leader you can be, it's got your name on it. For free guides and mini courses on many topics, go to www.theecommerceleader.com. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the 10K Collective Podcast, the place to be for six, seven and eight figure Amazon sellers. Today, we're going to talk really about something that's going to be probably more directly relevant to those who are selling business to business. I know quite a few physical product owners or business owners or brand creators, whatever you call it, who sell business to business to big box or medium sized box, whatever that is, retailers, but also a lot of agency owners, consultants and SaaS. So that's probably the people for whom this is going to be relevant. So Aaron, just to recap, is the author of Predictable Revenue, which has been called the Sales Bible of Silicon Valley. So this is where you're getting it from. First of all, let's talk about lead generation and what is it and why is that important?
Lead gen. So this is my, I think, main lesson. So I worked at Salesforce.com in the early 2000s. And when I joined, Salesforce was about 25 million in revenue and working to go up market from selling mostly to small business to bigger companies. And they'd hired a bunch of salespeople. And in business to business sales, the classic model was when you want to grow, more salespeople, because they would prospect or bring in relationships and bring in customers. But it wasn't working. Hired all these people, they weren't bringing in customers or leads even. So I sat down and created this outbound selling system that could basically create as many qualified leads as we needed to fill the pipeline of salespeople. Called it Cold Calling 2.0, wrote the book Predictable Revenue about it. But through that and then consulting with companies afterwards, what I realized was this lesson that for companies that want to grow, like you could have the best product and the best sales process or e-commerce process and the best people involved. But if you don't have a way to create leads in a predictable way, you're going to struggle. If you have a way to create predictable leads, you can get a lot of things wrong and still do okay. Right, so it's an importance of lead generation. Now, product-led growth is a term. Yes, having a great product can lead to leads, like word-of-mouth leads. So, you know, that's still kind of lead generation. There's three types of leads, though, they're really focused on, right? We call them seeds, nets, and spears. So first is seeds, really, it's all the word-of-mouth. So friends, family, referrals, customer referrals, like all that organic growth that can usually get your business off the ground. Now, those leads are going to be different because they're, again, usually free, mostly free. They're going to have faster sales cycles, tend to be easier, right? If I buy a steamer and I love it and I tell my friend, hey, John, you got to get the steamer, he's going to be sort of shortcutted to being a customer. Those are great, but hard to grow. So those are seeds. Nets would be marketing, right? Online marketing, digital marketing, billboards. You're doing that one-to-many broadcast. That kind of marketing is lead gen. It's great. It tends to be more quantity of leads than quality. Right? So make it a lot of possible buyers, but only a few that actually good fit and buy. Whether you're in e-commerce or B2B. So there's pros to that versus seeds, and there's cons. And the last, we said, type is spears. Spears should be outbound prospecting, outbound selling, outbound business development. Typically, you've got like a targeted list of companies as customers or channel partners, and you're reaching out in a very systematic way to engage them to see if there's some kind of fit to do, whether, again, they would be, you're going to sell to them directly if you're like an agency, or whether they could be like a distribution partner. So again, that tends to be, they have the pros and cons. The pros of spears, right, outbound selling, is you can call the people who aren't calling you. You tend to have bigger deal sizes. But the con, for example, is it's not always a good fit for everyone. So these seeds, nets, and spears, they're all important. A lot of it's like knowing which is the best fit for your business, like where you focus your energy.
Okay, and how would you determine where to, what is the best fit for your business in these three sort of models or types of leads?
Well, I always start with like, what's worked for you the best so far? Right. Is there something more you can do with that? Like if you've had some success marketing on Google or marketing with on Amazon with some of their paid programs, or has it been copywriting or maybe content marketing or outbound prospects? So what's worked for you first? So beyond that, and I think a lot of people don't invest enough in their strength. They don't realize they can go further than they realize before they've kind of plateaued there. So after that, I would look at where do you have some kind of calling or enthusiasm, a natural interest? Yeah, you do need to test. Like there's so many ways you can market and generate leads. Like you should be like testing different things. But I find people are often called towards one form versus another. Some people just feel more comfortable and excited about writing, or creating videos, or social media, or outbound selling. So I think it's important. It takes a lot more work and energy and trial and error than you realize to get kind of a lead generation program off the ground and working and generating leads. So any place you have some initial momentum, enthusiasm, passion, interest, or strengths, be a place to start with. So there's no right answer. You can be successful kind of anything you want. It's really about picking something, you know, one or two things, and really putting your energy into those versus trying to do 20 different things. Because in marketing, you could just create this whole list of stuff that you should do, and you just spread yourself too thin, right? So like, what's your main focus going to be? Is it going to be webinars, a book, video? Like, kind of pick your foundation. For me, I'm a book person. That's kind of my home base and my foundation. I can do video. It's not my passion. I don't really love doing it. Like I have a daughter who loves doing videos. I know other people great at it, or LinkedIn, you know, that's not my passion. It doesn't mean I ignore it necessarily, but like I focus on books first, and then where else? For me, that's number one. And then other things can be number two. Like LinkedIn these days is probably number two. So what's your number one? What's your number two?
Yeah, and I have to say that the focus thing has saved my bacon. The more I speak to my guests and look at what I've achieved, the more I'm sort of embarrassed. But on the other hand, focusing on podcasts, even with modest download numbers, has given me a stream of leads because I'm drawn to it. I'm passionate about it. And the fact that it is, God, it's a treadmill compared to other forms of marketing, I think. But I'm up for that, whereas other things just kind of die a bit because I'm not up for that. Yeah, I guess it is. I mean, like social media posting doesn't interest me much at all. So I've outsourced that to my team. And you know what? They're probably not doing as good a job as I would do. But I think I'd rather be podcasting and then they can talk about it on LinkedIn. You know, they basically use LinkedIn to pick up the podcast. And I'm good with that because I enjoy it. I'm loving this conversation. I wouldn't be loving sitting there tapping yet another, you know, motivational quote into Facebook at 1 a.m. I'd be wanting to, you know, stick spears in my eyes, I think.
So you gotta pick your battles.
You've got to pick your battles.
And there's a lot of people, like I'm the same way. Is it important for me to be on social media? Yeah. Do I do some of it myself? Yeah. Does my team do a lot? Yeah. But I don't like it.
Yeah, same here. I have to say it's not my thing somehow. But so tell me a bit about building it. We've talked about team already. I mean, just a quick taster of the basics of building your first sales team, which sounds quite intimidating to me and to many people perhaps. What are the sort of raw basics of that, assuming you're doing business to business?
A lot of people aren't going to be a good fit for having a sales team. By the way, I should say too, with lead generation, a lot of these initiatives, like the time to build a new lead generation program and have it being effective and generating revenue in a regular way could be, you know, 6 months to 18 months. Like, so we're not talking usually like 30 to 60 days. It could be like a year more. It just depends. And the sales team can the same way. Now, a lot of people have a negative connotation with the word sell or sales. Not just in, that's a worldwide, right? In the States as well. Having said that, I don't think people really realize, like really sit with the fact that to be successful at anything, you do need to have selling as a skill. Selling itself is not bad or good or minute, you know, it's just a skill. It's like saying playing the guitar. I mean, yeah, you could play, I guess, angry music or happy music. Well, with selling, you can you need selling to be able to be successful at anything, to be able to sell yourself an idea or a product. You know, some of the best salespeople in the world have been people like Mother Teresa, Elon Musk, John F. Kennedy. Just help inspire people, helping people make decisions that are going to be better for them. So when we say build a sales team, because I think a lot of people, especially here, be like, I would never have like a sales team. Well, maybe you should just call it a team to help your customers make decisions. But I think the common mistake now in Silicon Valley and a lot of fast growth companies, tech startups, fund companies, the biggest mistake is a founder starts the company and doesn't want to sell. So either A, they have this dream that, oh, I'm just going to build a great product and people just come and buy it. Okay, good luck with that. It only happens once in a while. It usually doesn't. Or they do the right thing, which is they kind of are involved themselves with selling the first 10 to 30 customers, as they should be. Founders really need to be a part of the selling process. Or in e-commerce, it could be like that customer discovery process. And then they're like, I'm getting tired of this. Especially if you're in an agency, or right? I'm getting tired of this. I need to hire a salesperson to take over for this because I don't want to do it anymore. I got other things to do. Hire a salesperson, and that person fails within, you know, probably 2 to 4 months. You knew within 30 days it wasn't going to work out, 60 days, but you just kind of weren't really sure. So another mistake that could be a salesperson, or hire like a sales leader and they fail. So how do you avoid this? It's really more baby steps. So you think about, again, phase zero, really the CEO, founder sells, right? Or is like very customer involved. Phase one after that is you hire a junior person, a salesperson, often called a sales development rep, like SDR. They can help with kind of inbound, like responding to inbound leads or making outbound calls for you. It's going to be appointment setting for you, whether it's inbound or not. They take off a lot of things that you really don't want to be doing. So now you've got two people in sales, right? The junior person and the C-level person. Then the next phase, phase two, is you either promote the junior person to selling, closing, or you hire an external, more senior salesperson. So you end up with the C-level person who's selling, a junior salesperson and a senior salesperson. So now, because you're taking these in steps, you're really reducing a lot of the risk of each step, where you're kind of like slowly putting systems in place and you're learning about how the sales team works and works together. So now you've got one junior, one senior. The next step is two junior people, two senior people. And once that's working and you feel like, okay, people are making their numbers, we're making some money, then you would hire a sales leader. Because again, most sales leaders who are a good fit for you are not going to be great about creating a team from scratch. They're much better usually at coming in, okay, there's something working here and I can make it more repeatable, or I can, you know, grow what it's already working. So the C-level CEO, co-founder really is kind of the head of sales, chief revenue officer for a lot longer than they typically expect to or want to be. But it's important if you really want to have the hands-on experience to know how your customers buy, how to sell to them, and how to make your team and processes work.
Yeah, it seems to me that
sales is a skill.
It seems to me there's two skills that, you know, from conversations with people like yourself that really, you know so much from such a lot of experience in different industries, that there's two business generic skill sets that you just cannot get around being at least moderately good at. One is sales and marketing. And I know they're not the same thing, but I think they're both important. And the other one, I've lumped those together. And the other one is just financial, basic financials. Because if you get the financials wrong, you kill the business from a lack of cash normally, specifically. And if you don't have any sales, then your business isn't even started, or it's going to die, isn't it? So I thank you for I suppose what you're saying is you've got to be prepared to get your hands dirty and talk to people who may or may not wish to buy from you and get some rejection, right? Which none of us enjoy. But
yeah, but that's also how you learn who's a fit and who's not.
Exactly. It's education. And I think, as you say, that the fact that you've got to be part of the first 20 or 30 sales is so critical for educating yourself about who the hell you are actually selling to, because you may have a customer avatar in mind that turns out to be quite different in reality. And that's just so common, right? I think anyone who's spoken to a business leader for 10 minutes will realize that the pivot thing is just, whether it's a massive one or a mild one, is just part and parcel of the early days of a startup. So
yeah, back and forth. And again, just, it can be a couple of years to kind of build this, what do you call it, a sales team or a customer team, or a lot of these things can be like a year or two long. I think in a lot of our perceptions and expectations are getting distorted, because all the success stories on social media are all about like quick wins and things. And that's just not how most, you know, that's only like 1% of the actual reality. And it's like, they call it the overnight success that took 10 years. That's how most people experiences are, which is a slow grind day after day, little improvements every day. Once in a while, there's some surprise. Once in a while, there's some big win you didn't expect, but it's like a marathon, not a sprint. It's going to take years longer than you want.
Yeah, thank you. That I like the reality check, guys, because then you're actually going to send people off with some expectation that matches reality. So final thing I'd love to get just a quick talk about from you is the forcing function idea. I really love this. Tell me a little bit more about how you feel this works.
Well, forcing functions to me, everyone has some sort of resistance to creating things. My resistance tends to be like overwhelm, or kind of more like a deer in headlights, right? There's some stress, there's like too many things to do, or there's some big problem, deer in headlights, like, what do I do? Other people tend to react like a rabid chihuahua, just kind of like working so busy and so much that they kind of lose sight of what they're, you know, what's the focus. So everyone kind of deals with stress in certainly different ways. But what works for me beautifully, and though it's uncomfortable, we call forcing functions. And the principle is, if you want to get into shape, do you sign up for a gym membership, or do you sign up to run a marathon and tell all your friends you're going to do it? Right. So kind of making like public declarations of action with deadlines. So a simpler example might be, before I published the predictable revenue book, over the course of 2 or 3 years, I did a bunch of events, webinars, in-person workshops, dinners. And so I got comfortable with this idea of, okay, in 3 weeks, I'm going to do an event. And I'll pick a date, Thursday, March the 22nd. And I'll say, all right, I'll put it on Facebook or someplace. So on Thursday, the March 22nd, I'm doing a predictable revenue event. And I wouldn't know what it would be yet. But at least by saying that, it kind of forced me to follow through to fill in, well, who would I invite and what would it be about and what would I ask them to do? And by doing these events and sort of announcing them before I knew what I was doing and doing that again and again, it really forced a lot of clarity in my business and book, because I think that was really the number one thing that made the predictable revenue book a bestseller. Was having done these events and really kind of tuned into the essence of what the book was about and what people really needed. Now, it's not just events, although that's probably the easiest one for me, and I use that the most. These like commitments of publication dates and event dates. Another example would be, if you have a business, if you take investors' money, now you are forced to grow. You don't really have a choice to make it kind of like a lifestyle, relaxed business versus a growth business. So, having children for me, getting married, and having kids. Then I had to make more money, right? And I ended up growing when I had to make more money, within 4 years, I grew my income 11 times. So forcing functions, if my resistance, for example, is kind of the paralysis or procrastination, they just like make action happen. I have to focus on things and I have to get things done. I don't have an option. So it moves things forward. It's like manufactured motivation, motivation on demand. Uncomfortable motivation on demand, but it works.
Excellent. Motivation on demand. I like it. And by the way, I can really relate to the metaphor of entering a marathon and then telling everyone about it, because I didn't enter a marathon yet, but half marathons, I entered three last year, two of which I told people all about, and one I just did it because I wanted to see if I could beat my time, which was very, very poor time. But for me personally, it was just important because I spend so much time behind my computer. So you've hit the nail on the head, which just goes to show the importance of speaking your customer's language. You just happen to get that one lucky, I think. But motivation on demand is great. I really like the fact that you're prepared to put yourself deliberately in a situation which is uncomfortable and forces you to do the work. I mean, I'm glad to hear you say that, because I sometimes feel bad about the fact that I have to do that to myself, but I'm obviously not alone in that way. And you're obviously an example of the fact that it works gangbusters if you do it well.
Yeah,
enough.
It's everybody. Everyone's got their own, you know, issue, challenge, right? And thing is, like on social media or books, it's usually like puff pieces. They rarely, you know, don't know how much Elon Musk really talks about. Probably, I think he refers to sometimes he's like how hard his life is. Like, you wouldn't want to be me, right? Because he's never happy because he's always so stressed out. I don't know if that's exact. I'm kind of paraphrasing, but a lot of leaders and famous people, we only see the bright side. We don't see their dark side. So
absolutely,
everyone's got it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And in the end, as you said, it relates back to that thing of, you see the overnight success, but you don't see the 10 years that went into it. Or even if they were literally overnight success, like Zuckerberg coming out of whatever it was, Stanford, and you don't see what it's cost him. I mean, I don't think I'd want to be Mark Zuckerberg either, even though, he's rich and it's allegedly desirable. I'm sure his life is very complicated. So yeah. I feel better about that. So just a quick couple of plugs for your very, very good books. Predictable Revenue, which is you can find on Amazon or good bookshops near you. Also go to predictablerevenue.com. There's a lot of very useful looking calculators and tools and what have you that I've only scratched the surface of. But
well, predictablerevenue.com is our business. So I'm co-CEO of a $5-7 million business with a few dozen people. It's really about building outbound sales teams. So that's for you for like B2B companies who want help, like systematizing sales and growing. Otherwise, like fromimpossible.com is the site for the From Impossible to Inevitable book, which is really for anyone who has a business, wants to grow one business and be smart about why their business isn't growing, how to grow it faster. The best place to start.
Absolutely. And having read the first couple of chapters of that, and we talked about that in the last episode as well. If you haven't heard that, go to 10kcollective.com and you can read the notes and listen to our discussion about that. Because, yeah, that's got to be the critical thing. As you said, most businesses aren't in a position to grow yet. So get that sorted first before you even begin to worry about how to grow. So very, very wise advice. Aaron, it's been a total pleasure. I know you've probably got, about 10 children's parties to go and deal with and then a multi-million-dollar company to run. So I don't know how you do it. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you so, so much for coming on.
Yeah, no, thank you. Just more, never any forcing functions, honestly. Just keep me going.
Excellent. Well, you're a living proof. Thank you very much for coming on to the show. Thanks so much for listening to the 10K Collective podcast, part of the family of amazing FBA podcasts. Today's episode is sponsored by the new e-commerce podcast, The E-Commerce Leader. The podcast is hosted by yours truly and Jason Miles, multi-million dollar Shopify owner and Udemy's highest rated e-commerce instructor. If you're the owner of a thriving online business and you want to become the best e-commerce leader you can be, it's got your name on it. For free guides and mini courses on many topics, go to www.theecommerceleader.com.